Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Deadline's Hollywood Podcast. I am your co-host, Amanda Anduka.
And my name is Dino Ray Ramos.
And for today's episode, we have Sonequa Martin-Green, who is best known for her Walking Dead character, Sasha, who is no longer with us.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Well, that was a long time
but
ago,
now
right?
She's... It wasn't a long time
now
ago.
Now she's Michael Burnham on Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access.
Which is, I mean, this is a history-making character, right?
Yeah. She's a female lead. She's a black female lead. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get this wrong. Trekkies might get mad at me. I don't know what her ranking is. I think it's captain.
Can you chime in?
She's like the lead.
Yeah, she's the lead.
It's a big deal.
You know, the first black face of the franchise.
And this is the whole
series.
The whole series is like very progressive. Has a gay couple.
Yeah, we had Wilson Cruz who played one half of the
And then there was an Asian lead as well.
Yeah.
So she is kind of making history in that kind of the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah, and we talk about her dealing with fans of such a long-time beloved franchise. Yeah,
very rabid fans.
We talk about encounters that she's had and dealing with, like, because there's a bit of backlash when it was first announced. And
because,
you know,
yeah, we talk
people
about
don't
that
like
a lot.
Change sometimes or they don't respond.
But that's
well
kind
to
of what the whole Star Trek franchise was based, and I think we talk about this as well. It's about inclusivity. Mm-hmm. Like even the very first Star Trek, like the TV show, it had the first interracial kiss.
Yeah,
on network TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, co-sign with, David.
Yeah,
and that means
fact
it's true.
Check. But yeah, true. So we talk a lot about that, but yeah, she was awesome.
She was. We talked about, we attended this event during the Oscar season called Black Women in Hollywood. It's put on by Essence. And, you know, to me, it was the most uplifting event that I went throughout the whole, that whole season. It was a lot of female empowerment, a lot of sisterhood. It was, I mean, it honored Lupita. There was, not Lupita, sorry,
Mina.
Denai. Lena Waithe was one of the honorees. So was
friend of the podcast,
Tessa Thompson, who you know is doing great things for women of color, was also honored. So it was really nice, and she rocked my sweater.
I know. Well, it's not,
it's not my sweater, but we all.
Oh
got
yeah,
these
and
sweaters.
Then like we talked about us planning a one for all people of color at Red Lobster.
So without further ado,
Sonequa Martin-Green.
Sonequa, thank you again for being here. We're actually very excited to have you on
here. Very excited. Thank you.
You've played some pretty iconic roles, like Sasha and now Michael. I feel like these roles are going to be talked about for years to come. I think so, in my opinion.
Oh,
But I just want to start from the beginning and when you first got into the business, like what kind of roles were you auditioning for? What were you getting offered?
Offers, no. First of all, I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, no worries.
And yes, so when I first got started, when I graduated from the University of Alabama with my theater degree, and I moved straight to New York City, I was actually very blessed. There were lots of auditions, lots of nose turning up to my accent and everything because I still had a
Southern
pretty
accent.
We're from Texas.
So when
I say y'all, people make fun of me.
Exactly. And so, you know, it was still, you know, you could still hear it and everything. And so there was a lot of, you know, I got a lot of side eye and a lot of, you know, teasing and whatnot. But yes, it was a lot of, you know, just random little bits that I was auditioning for the first probably 6 to 8 months that I was in New York City. And then I was blessed to audition for Toe to Toe, which ended up being, you know, such a revolutionary role for me and a breakthrough. a breakout role for me, and mm-hmm. and it was a breakthrough too. Mm-hmm. But I found myself from that role forward, which I'll forever be grateful to Emily Apt, who was the writer, director, and producer of that film, for taking a chance on me, as they say, because from that point forward, I really found myself playing a lot of strong girls at the mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. a lot of these strong teenagers who had had a distinct moral compass, who were very goal-oriented and mission-oriented. And I just sort of looked back a few years later and I said, I've been playing really strong girls and now I'm ready to play women.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And, you know, yes. there was a shift with that for me because I had such a young face. So even once I started playing women, I have played quite strong women that's, from the beginning.
That's good. That's always good.
Because a lot of people that come on this, the podcast, like when they first started out, they always get the stereotypical type roles, you know?
Yeah, like... We just had someone.
Somebody that was like, they got the, she was a Latino actor. She's like, I got the maids and the prostitutes.
Which is really sad. Or like, you know, you get thug or, you absolutely. Know, martial artist.
Or thug's girlfriend. Thug's exactly.
Or, you know,
or best friend.
Or sassy sidekick.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah, and of course, there's a place for those roles. And, you know, when you tell the truth, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Everybody's story deserves to be told. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, it's interesting because something that I consider to be an annoyance, which was how young I looked, because I was a woman. I was in my early 20s, but I was still a woman, but I was playing these teenagers, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was playing these, you know, these really, really young, these older adolescents and younger adults. And I thought to myself, when am I going to play women? But mm-hmm. it actually afforded me the opportunity to play these strong people, mm-hmm. because these teenagers were they were fierce. Mm-hmm. And so after the fact, you know, looking back in hindsight, I thought, well, thank God I looked young, because mm-hmm. I played these really intricate people who were, you know, in these coming of age type mm-hmm. stories. Mm-hmm. So that's how I sort of, I guess, missed it.
Who did you look up to, like coming up to the career?
Well, this is interesting, but I looked up to a lot of different people. I looked up to, when I was really little, before I understood that I was meant to be an actor, I looked up to Angela Bassett for sure, because she was just a beast. And
which movie did it for
What's
you?
Love got to
do it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. She was a beast. Yes. And just to see this woman, you know, make this journey from battered to victor, mm-hmm. and, you know, from the abused to the hero, mm-hmm. You know, was so profound, and obviously I, you know, was moved by Tina Turner, you mm-hmm. know, the real woman. Yeah. And I would sit in my room and think about her as a child and think about her journey and think about her life and how she was able to overcome. But then there were other women along the way. You know, I really loved Whoopi Goldberg. I went through a period where I really loved Charlize Theron. Mm-hmm. Theron Theron.
Yeah. I'm always confused about that, too. Theron Theron.
One of those is right.
Yeah, I feel like years ago people were saying Theron, and then now people are saying Theron.
Yeah.
Well, forgive me, Charlize. Yeah. I ain't trying to get your name wrong. So yes. And then there were a lot of men that I was moved by mm-hmm. as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. And weirdly enough, I found a lot of similarities with my craft mm-hmm. with a lot of men. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Denzel is a very common one, but Billy Crudup is one that I don't hear many people talk about, but
I love him.
My goodness. Mm. If you stage beauty, I believe that's
right. Yes.
My goodness.
Yes.
Bringing Out the Dead mm-hmm. is another one. Another film he did with Jennifer Connelly that is just this masterpiece, you know, this masterclass in acting. Mm-hmm. And James Marsters was another one who I really took to from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, Buffy.
Yes. And so, yes, there were these, you know, sort of like these men that were not, you know, widely popular that, you know, sort of had this work behind the scenes mm-hmm. that I was just looking at and learning from and gleaning from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are lots of others that I can't think of in this moment. Yeah.
So in Star Trek Discovery, mm-hmm. you are... Commander?
Yes. Well, Yeah,
yes. Right now.
Yeah. Commander Michael Burnham. Yes. So how familiar were you with Star Trek, the Star Trek world? Mm-hmm. And if you weren't, like, how did you even kind of prepare for, because you know how Star Trek fans are.
Yeah,
they take ownership.
They do.
But, like, how familiar were you with the franchise? And then how did you even just kind of prepare you to be put in this position where you're going to be up there with James T. Kirk and Spock and Picard and all these people? Like, how did you even, like, get into that mindset?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was a journey.
Yeah.
Mindset. It really was. Uh-huh. Because I was very aware of Star Trek, right? It's hard for any of us to not be aware of it and its impact. Mm-hmm. I knew what an institution it was and how prodigious it was. And so I had not really seen anything in it. I had seen the most recent J.J. Abrams movies. Mm-hmm. But it used to be on. I remember the original series being on. I remember Next Generation being on the TV when I was growing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I've been saying a lot that, you know, maybe osmotically it came into me some kind of way. But I, you know, I knew what it meant, and I knew what a big deal it was. And I just wanted to serve, and I wanted to do it justice, and I wanted to be of utmost service. Mm-hmm. And so I purposed to watch every single thing that there ever was. And as I joke about quite often, I did not get very far because there is a lot. Content.
Yeah.
And I saw quite a bit of TOS. I saw quite a bit of Voyager. I saw quite a bit of Enterprise. I didn't see any of the movies yet. So I am still going to see everything, but I know it's going to take me some time. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, that had a lot to do with it. It was really digging into the universe, and it was really, you know, getting to know as much as I possibly could. Of course, for me, digging into the original series was really helpful because of Spock.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
of his presence in the show, the way the writers have, I must say, brilliantly woven Michael Burnham into the family of Spock, mm-hmm. Sarek and Amanda. I mean, I just love it. I love what they've done. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, pulled a lot from that because I thought, well, this is my surrogate brother. And so this is, you know, this is teaching me about my life, my upbringing and whatnot as Michael Burnham. So it was really about that. And it was really about understanding that I cannot stay overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I have to get past that so that I can, you know, so give the story what it needs.
Being the first Black female to really just like, lead this new
Starfleet.
The Starfleet.
Yeah, you're the leader.
Yeah, just true. Were there any, because of, you know, social media, they're mm-hmm. they just never, like, they never cease to amaze.
They're never gonna be silent.
They're never gonna be silent about anything. So, but was there any hesitation on your part to take on this role because knowing that it's such a big franchise?
Was there stomach and knots?
There was absolutely no hesitation whatsoever. As soon as I saw that it was the path that, you know, basically God had laid out for me, mm-hmm. I said, let's do this. Mm-hmm. I thought, because there was some backlash and there was a bit of vitriol and there was some hateration.
There was a lot of hate. Mary J.
Okay. But I was at once surprised by it and on the other hand not surprised by it. It was a double-sided coin. Mm-hmm. Because I, being from the South, and being a Black woman in America from the South, you know, I know all there is to know about that. I have very particular, personal, intimate experiences with that, mm-hmm. With that point of view, with that white supremacist point of view, with that patriarchal point of view. And so, but at the same time, I thought, but this is Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And what I've said before is that Star Trek has always had a legacy of diversity, universality, indivisibility, equality. We have reached a point in this story of Star Trek, we've reached a point where these things are no longer, you know, an issue. Mm-hmm. You know, we've overcome them, a lot of the isms that we deal with today. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking to myself, if you love Star Trek, if you really do love it, then this makes no sense. Yeah. Then this is completely antithetical mm-hmm. to what Star Trek represents. So I don't understand you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't understand what you mean. You're being hypocritical. So it was an interesting experience, but I, you know, I have such an incredible group of people around me in the company of Star Trek, with the producing staff, the writers, the cast, the crew. Mm. And we all just so firmly believe in what we're doing. We really do take it so seriously, and we're so passionate about it. Mm-hmm. And so we all banded together, and we were all unified, and we all said, well, join us.
Yeah, or
join us.
Or not.
Like, or just go do something else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe that just totally makes sense, because this, like, it seems like Star Trek was started on this foundation of absolutely inclusion and diversity. And this cast, this we had Wilson on.
Yes. I love that podcast, by the way.
Thank you.
Love you, Wilson.
And just the fact that it had the first same-sex couple. Yeah. You know.
Absolutely. The first female captain with a female first officer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The first Asian female captain. And obviously the first black female, you know.
And lead. I know that there was a lot of backlash in the beginning of the series I don't want to spoil it, whatever. But it's if it was a different time, honestly, because people are quick to tweet Instagram, Facebook, or whatever.
Well, a lot of it also has to do with our political climate.
People
feel very justified in their closed-mindedness and in their, you know, tainted social conditioning. Mm-hmm. They feel very justified in it. And so that's why it's so important for us to love and have empathy, because love is what never fails.
Yeah.
Love never fails, right? And so that's why, rather than say, well, forget you then. You know, it's like, how about you join us?
Yes.
How about you give it a shot and see what happens?
Yeah.
See if it opens you up.
Yeah.
Hopefully, prayerfully, it will.
Hopefully, it will. So, in addition to Star Trek Discovery, you also starred in Walking Dead.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
And now with movies like Black Panther and Wrinkle in Time, we're seeing more black leads in fantasy and sci-fi.
Like something that, you know, we would never...
I mean, even before, they were leads, it was a niche thing.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, it would be a black exploitation
kind of
something ordeal. But now it's just we see Black Panther, and now it's making gajillion dollars.
It is making gajillion dollars.
Yeah, I think I just read it's $19 million shy of being the highest grossing, I think, either Marvel movie or superhero movie of all
probably
time.
I wouldn't imagine. Wouldn't be surprised.
I would not either.
Yeah.
I hope it makes it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to make it.
I mean, they're really going to make a sequel, so.
Of course, right?
That's a no-brainer.
So we're seeing more black leads in fantasy and sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? And do you remain optimistic about diverse roles for, you know, people of color, like diversity within diversity?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I remain optimistic, and I think it's easy to remain optimistic when you see it, right? You know, because for a long time all we had was to hope for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing it, you know, which is amazing, and I hope that it expands. Mm-hmm. I hope, I'm really excited for that big blockbuster superhero film with an Asian.
Am I.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. You know. And so, and obviously we've had great, you know, Asian characters, but I really want to see the sort of tent pole, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I mean,
and that's only, it's coming, you know. Yeah. We're taking the steps toward that right now. Mm-hmm. So I am very optimistic. And I mean, you know, dollar bills, y'all, that's for real, because that's really the, you know, that's the money talks, right?
Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
You know, what has happened so much in the past is that, you know, producers and studio heads and whatnot have said that, oh, well, it doesn't sell. It doesn't sell. It doesn't sell. It doesn't sell.
Yeah.
And yes, it does.
And it does.
Right? And it's because people are so ready for it. People are so ready to see it depicted on their screens, what the world actually looks like when they walk outside, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, I think art has a very deep responsibility to do that. I think storytelling has a deep responsibility to do that. We have to be a mirror. That's what art is for.
Yeah.
So I am gassed all the way up about what's happening right now.
I just hope the momentum continues.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like we have Wrinkle in Time. And
we do.
When I was telling Amanda this, when I saw that little Filipino boy, I started crying.
Yes.
And Amanda laughed at me.
I just. Well, she just, was just picturing, because I didn't see you cry, so I was just picturing you, like,
I was okay. I wasn't like full out bawling, but I was like, because I see me as a little kid, I see my little nephews, and I was just like,
which is what it's all about.
It's kind of that mirroring thing.
You have to see yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to. If we want art to affect people, if we want it to positively affect people and incite positive change, people have to see themselves in order for that to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember how excited I was about Slumdog Millionaire. Remember how exciting Slumdog Millionaire was?
Yeah.
It was such a tremendous film, and it had this amazing run in the theaters, and obviously it won the Oscar and everything, and I was like, this is amazing. So yes, we're building.
Yeah.
We're building.
So thinking back at the beginning of your career, did you ever, could you ever have imagined you being in this position that you are right now and having the type of iconic roles that you've had the past two projects?
I really did not imagine. I mean, even to put it simply, I didn't even imagine I would land in sci-fi.
Yeah.
I loved sci-fi growing up. I really did. And when I knew that I needed to be an actor, that was what I was supposed to do with my life, I never thought of sci-fi. I always sort of thought of drama.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to do
biopics.
Things like that. You know, I always wanted to do theater, film, and TV. I knew I wanted to do all three. But I certainly didn't think I would land mostly in TV, and I didn't know that it would be sci-fi on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the sci-fi genre. Because of its possibilities, because of its potential, you know, there's so many things that you can inject into sci-fi stories. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get away with a lot of deep sociopolitical themes and things that really touch someone because they're opened up from the fantasy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get those themes in there, right? So I really appreciate sci-fi. I appreciate that's where I've sort of landed. Mm-hmm. Because I can really see the power of the stories that are being told. Mm-hmm. I feel like it really, people can really dive into it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. And I mean, those are the ones that usually have the big cult following. Mm-hmm. So it's great to have somebody like you in these type of big, like Walking Dead obviously is a huge franchise.
Yeah.
Star Trek is a huge franchise. Just to have you there to like we talked about before, be that mirror.
Absolutely. You know,
for some young actor that wants to come up, they can also do sci-fi. It didn't have to be drama.
Exactly.
Have to be, so,
and they can be, you know, for those, I mean, it always makes me want to cry when I talk about the youth. But, you know, it's like you can be a leader.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can be the smartest person in the room. And you can be a scientist. And you can be an astronaut. And you can be an engineer. And you can be a genius, you know. And I think that's one of the things that's most powerful about my character on Star Trek, Michael Burnham, is that, you know, yes, it's this black woman who's this leader, but she's also a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really powerful for, you know, young black girls and young girls of all colors to see that, and young boys.
Yeah.
To see, they need to see it too.
Yeah. There's just, we're multifaceted, you know? Like,
yes.
we're not one-dimensional.
It's so true.
But you're wearing a sweater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yes.
This is an audio podcast.
Yeah.
But I know you can't see it.
Yeah.
But you and Amanda both went to an event.
Yeah, the Essence Black Women in Hollywood. And I was just telling her, we cover a lot of events during film award season, but that was my absolute favorite.
I wish I was there. Would I have been invited?
Yeah, no, of course you would.
But
yeah,
I had to work.
Just like from the people that were in the room to the people that were being honored.
Absolutely.
Everybody, everything, like it was just exuding like sisterhood. And
it
loved it.
That's such a good word for it.
Yeah.
It was sisterhood. It was so uplifting.
So uplifting.
There was so much genuine love and admonition and admiration and respect in the room. And you know, Danai Gurira, my beloved sister was honored that night. Tiffany Haddish, Tessa Thompson, and Lena Waithe. And you know, the words that came out of their mouths, you know, when they were on that stage. The shirt is something that Essence gifted all of us. It says
respect, protect, love, and I think it says the black woman.
Yes.
What is that in the back?
Nothing. There's nothing,
there's
on,
nothing
the back.
On the back.
Yeah.
But
it was very empowering. I just remember even like this, like little, like during Danai's speech, she you know, saying happy birthday to Lupita. And it was like just sharing that your moment with somebody else, to me, was like, that said a lot, you know?
It really did. Because it was Lupita's birthday that day. Yeah. And she came to be there with Danai.
Yeah.
On her own birthday. And so Danai wanted to, you know, celebrate her. And it was just a phenomenal experience. And just the connections that were made as well, because there was no sense of, there was no tension. It was all love. And so many people were, you know, hugging and laughing and talking and connecting. And I was numb. I was full and numb, you know, when I walked away. I was so
happy. Was the food good?
And people came to show, like, literally, I was like, this is like the Oscars. Like, people came dressed.
Was it like a couple days before the Oscars?
It was, it was Thursday. Oscars, yeah, it was a Thursday before the Oscars. And it was a luncheon, but people, like, came in, like, gowns. I came in, like, some pants and a shirt. I was like, it's a luncheon. What do people wear to luncheon?
You're like, why are you?
People are going to show up.
And I was like, people came in such, like, nice outfits. I know better for next time. But, no, it was a great, I wish there was an event like that, just with every, like, all the communities of, people of color. I think that would be really interesting.
Let's start it. Be the solution.
Let's just start it. We'll have it at Red Lobster.
We sure will. Or Olive Garden.
Red Lobster.
Infinite salad and breadsticks.
So is there a role or genre that you haven't tackled yet that you...
I haven't done. I would love to do.
Do you have an idea of who you wanted?
Oh, is there a list? Okay, what about top three or two?
Oh goodness. Okay. Well, oh gosh, that one's hard. There's so many.
I could see you as like a who was the one that Halle Berry did?
Oh, Dorothy
Dandridge. Yeah, I could see you as a Dorothy Dandridge.
Halle gave her all for that, didn't she?
Yeah.
By the way. Mad respect to her for that. But FloJo is fascinating to me. She's fascinating to me. That's just one that I can think of. There's so many.
But FloJo, I think, let's make that happen, guys.
Yeah.
I'll make that happen, and then the diversity luncheon.
let's start it right now.
There's a lot of things need to happen.
Okay, so between Sasha and Commander Burnham, who would make the better wingman? I know you're married. But let's say you're single. You are going out to the club. Who would you bring with you?
Oh, goodness. Okay, that one's tough.
Yeah.
Because Sasha. Sasha is ready to fight, right? And so, you know,
she'll be a little aggressive.
Yeah, she'll be aggressive. There's, you know, it's kind of hard for Sasha to kick back and have a good time. It's all about
because it took her a while to let
people in.
Who's the redhead? What's his name?
Abraham. Bob and Abraham.
Yeah, it took a while to let them in.
So, you know, the last time we saw Sasha go to a party, she had a panic attack from her PTSD. I'm going to say probably Michael Burnham.
Okay.
Because even though Michael Burnham would be a bit awkward because Michael is so analytical, I think we could make it work.
Okay.
I think I could use... I could use the brains to my advantage.
Yeah, I'm thinking Sasha could scare into, you know, having, and you know, then, as, you know, like, give a guy no choice. You know what I mean?
And then Michael could be like that person that's like, girl, you can't talk to him. Like,
It's like, oh, he has a belt clip for his phone.
Exactly.
Ugly ass shoes.
He has a Bluetooth.
I would say,
in
like,
his
logically
ear.
Speaking, you know, it's just not a good logical decision.
Yeah, it's
all about logic.
That would make more sense.
I need a Michael in my life.
Right?
Michael would
lay it all out for you.
Michael would be more analytical, whereas Sasha would be more lead with her feelings.
Absolutely.
So that's all that is.
That's, yeah.
I would probably want Sasha.
You would? He's like, I'm ready to have some folks scared.
Exactly. Scare you into liking me. Scare off all the F boys. So what's been your craziest, because you've done like the Comic Cons and all, like, what's been your craziest fanboy, fangirl moment so far?
I mean, probably have a bunch of them. But
oh, man.
Which one kind of like said, okay, maybe it's restraining order time?
Oh, no.
Or just like it kind of scared, kind of shook you off guard.
Honestly say there has never been any like crazy.
Okay, good. There's never been
any restraining order type situations. Like, thank God for that. Because I know some people have those experiences.
Yeah.
But I have not had any of those. But it's, there have been so many, and I log them in my heart and in my memory. But I mean, really, it's hard to say, because I mean, there are the people who, the very first time I saw someone cosplay as me was a really big,
not necessarily, not even crazy, but memorable.
That was a really crazy moment. The first time, you know, the first time I shed tears with someone, right? Because, you know, if you're crying in my face, then there's no way I can't cry. We're just crying together and having this beautiful exchange. And, you know, that was crazy. And then, you know, the first time someone said, oh, hey, can you draw your name or a heart right here? I'm going to go get a tattoo.
Whoa.
I'm like, ah.
Like, are you?
Did you do it?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But I took so much time.
Wait, so somebody has a tattoo of your name?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Or your autograph.
Like my initials or a heart I drew. No, but there have been a couple of times where they've come back to me maybe like a year later at the same convention, and they show me and I'm like, ah, whoa, that's wild. That is crazy. So yeah, there's just such a catalog
of experiences.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you had no crazy restraining order.
Knock on wood. Right. Exactly.
But yeah, no, nothing crazy.
So we asked this. This is the final question. We asked this to all our guests. Mm-hmm. Is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, actor, producer, director, whoever, like creative, that isn't in the mainstream that you think deserves more recognition or and time in the spotlight? I know there's a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot.
Yeah. Well, I have three.
It's like a three. That's
fine.
Three
friends. There are some voices that are sort of like, you know, people are talking, but I would love to see even more. Yeah. Victoria Mahoney and Emily Apt.
I met Victoria.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's doing great things.
And I worked with her years and years and years ago when she wrote, directed, and produced Yelling to the Sky. Mm-hmm. It was starring Zoe Kravitz. Mm-hmm. And Gabby Sidibe was also in the film. And it was an amazing time. It was way back, almost 10 years ago. But, you know, she's an emerging voice, and she's been directing a lot of pilots lately. She's killing it. But I'm really excited to see her, you know, just like continue to go.
Yeah.
Emily Apt as well, who, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, wrote, directed, and produced Toe to Toe, uh-huh, which was also in 2008. And I'm really excited to see her. She did this documentary called Daddy Don't Go. I think it was 3 years ago now, which was just, you know, phenomenal. And so I'm excited to see these women, mm-hmm, because there's such a dearth of female directors.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Okay, and yeah. I'm really excited to see them, because these are women that I have experienced myself. I have seen what they are capable of. I've seen the stories that they are capable of telling, mm-hmm, and the empathy that they lead with, and the power as well. I really appreciate. Also, I have a really close friend who is an emerging, up-and-coming producer. Oh. I'm really excited for her. Her name is Stephanie Mosley, mm-hmm, and she has got some phenomenal stories. She tells me of these stories that she's always writing so many stories all at once, and she tells me of them, and I go, you know, I'm just floored. So I'm excited to see her journey.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for being part of this movement
and this moment.
And being you.
Truly can't wait to see what else you have coming in the future.
And maybe at the luncheon, my husband and son can have a little, we can do a little song and dance for it before we
It's going to be at Red Lobster. Don't forget.
There we go. That's right.
We're going to rent out the Red Lobster in Thousand Oaks.
There we go. Thank you guys for what you do. Thank you for what you do.